Hey, I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news now for some 30 years, two languages all over the world, here in the United States, interviewed four U.S. presidents, world leaders, worked at four of the U.S.'s major television networks. I don't like what they do. I think news should be honest, direct, and impactful. This is Direct Impact. I want to talk about China's Xi Jinping. This is a man suddenly confronted with two things at once, one planned and one unplanned, both big. President Xi is trying to continue his legacy of, his signature project, the Belt and Road Initiative. What is the BRI, really? Well, it's China's self-described way of creating economic growth in Asia, the Pacific Rim, Africa, as well as Central and Eastern Europe. There is Xi, along with Russian President Vladimir Putin, at the summit, commemorating 10 years of the BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative. The optics of those two leaders together is an irritant to Western politicians like, you know, the UK and the United States. More on that is coming up in just a little bit, I promise. But stay with me for a while, because I want to talk more about just the BRI summit right now. Xi was also joined there by leaders from all over the world who support his initiative and the loans and the infrastructure expertise that they hope to receive from the BRI. With it, they hope to build power plants for their countries, or railroads and highways and shipping ports and fiber optics networks, that kind of stuff. To be fair, not all of the BRI's infrastructure projects have worked out well. Still, most global South and non-Western aligned countries, they're still in. Most of them all in. They want to be a part of this. Africa, yes. Middle East, same. And more than 20 countries in Latin America are saying si to Xi. Too easy. But then there are the countries who refuse to join. Even one that recently dropped out. Talk about Italy here. I don't know if you've heard, Italy, the only country who was both part of the G7 and the BRI, was a no-show at the summit. Of course, it will come as no surprise to you to hear that the country that most despises BRI and China and puts pressure on others to not join or quit is, you guessed it, our country, the United States. In fact, this warning is from the U.S.-based think tank. It's called Pacific Rim. Could look them up. They're telling countries interested in joining the BRI not to, like don't, because it will result, they say, in the Chinese having access and control over their communications, their surveillance, their media, and to boot, they're going to spy on them. That's not all. In fact, if that's not scary enough, there's this. Now, remember the image of Presidents Xi and Putin together? Let's go back to that. The U.S. media's TV networks and newspapers have been pouncing and have used it as a bludgeoning tool against the BRI. Even the Wall Street Journal, good newspaper, chimed in with this very, very, very critical report. It's not a ringing endorsement, right? Nor was one expected. But something happened on the way to this year's BRI summit that suddenly shifted the world's focus elsewhere. It also put Xi in a very difficult role of playing both summit host and participant in a world conflict. The Hamas attack and Israel's heavy-handed response seems to have created both a distraction and an opportunity for the Chinese leader. And in a move right out of Machiavelli's The Prince, she took advantage of the opportunity and used it to try and differentiate himself from President Joe Biden. First, let's go through how he did this. First, he made it a point to meet with a leading Arab leader, Egyptian President El-Sisi, who is an Israeli detractor. Then she called on Israel to declare a ceasefire and warn them against a ground invasion. Then he refused to call Hamas a terrorist organization and instead called for a two-state solution. In fact, here's Xi's spokesperson, Mao Ning.
解决巴以冲突循环往复的出路在于恢复和谈，落实两国方案，推动巴勒斯坦问题早日通过政治方式实现全面妥善解决，使各方的合理关切得到保障。中方将继续同国际社会一道为此做出不懈努力。Let's
stay on this, and let me ask this: what is behind the geopolitics of Xi's reaction? In other words, what is Xi's real play here? Well, here it is. Israel is the United States' biggest ally. China's allies are on the opposing side, among the biggest being Iran. By the way, China has tried to build relations with Israel, but Washington has always intervened, pressing Israel to keep China away, keep China out, and forcing Israel to always let them know whatever China talked to them about. So Israel is not a bet that has paid off well for Beijing, which is why Xi is instead turning to the Arab countries, and especially the Gulf states, like the Saudis, who now are once again pulling away from Israel because of the attacks on Gaza, because they feel they need to, because of the images, the optics. So, given all that, and given the U.S. attacks on his pet project, you know, the Belt and Road Initiative, what is Xi's message right now to the Arab and Gulf states? It's simple, right?
It's this.
It goes like this. We, would say Xi, we are supporting Palestinians, while the U.S. is helping Israel, and Israel is bombing Palestinians. That's his argument. And it does seem brilliantly Machiavellian, but it's not a hand he could also overplay. And I'll tell you why. Because Xi cannot afford to have this conflict escalate into an all-out war, nor is he likely to support Iran's call for an oil embargo. The reason is China is among the world's largest consumers of oil. A major war would make oil more expensive. So here's the upshot. For Xi, avoiding war is important, but taking an easy victory lap against his most ardent critic, the U.S., in the battle for PR, that one, that's not one he can pass up. All right, let's talk about this now with Anna Guh. She's a host and reporter for CGTN Radio. She's also a geopolitical commentator. So she talks about the whole enchilada, all the things that are going on in the world, studies it, and has conversations on it all the time. Anna, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to finally talk to you in person.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say. I was taken aback by President Xi and his handling of the recent Belt and Road Summit. And doing so, by the way, well, the whole world seemed to be coming apart because of what was going on in the Middle East. How do you think he was able to handle that?
I think when we talk about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, ever since the beginning of the conflict, actually, China has repeatedly said that all violence and attacks against the civilians should be condemned, and any violation of international law should be rejected. In fact, in a UN security draft resolution supported by China and the majority of members, vetoed by the United States back on October 17th, the countries collectively expressed a similar stance and clearly rejected and condemned the terrorist attacks by Hamas that took place in Israel starting on October 7th.
What you just said is the antithesis of the U.S. position, which makes me immediately have to ask you, and I apologize for interrupting, it looks like, at least when it comes to this, China is staking a position which is completely the polar opposite of the United States position, and they're doing so, I think, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, in such a way because they want the Arab world to hear that they're staking a position that's different than the U.S. position. Kind of like public relations and marketing, no?
You're absolutely right. I think that's the point I want to make here. The current situation is clear and should not be mistaken, is that 2.3 million innocent civilians in Gaza are lecturing amidst indiscriminate bombardment. Even in hospitals, schools, refugee camps, and UN facilities, they are not spared. Water, electricity, food, and a few supplies have been cut off for almost a month. Starving children and desperate mothers can be seen everywhere. To quote Secretary General Guterres, the people in Gaza face and are suffering. And to end this, and actually China calls on all parties to cease all hostilities, disengage immediately and put in place a humanitarian truce, specifically calls on Israel as an occupying power to lift its full siege on Gaza, immediately end its emergency evacuation order, and restore the supply of basic necessities.
That's interesting. And I have to say, you and I are supposed to be having a conversation right now about Belt and Road Initiative. You can't have a conversation about anything in the world right now without referring to the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is what's going on in Gaza right now. So I don't mean to, detract the conversation and turn it into a conversation about Israelis and Palestinians. But I did want to start there because as that's happening, the Chinese are essentially reaffirming the 10th year anniversary of the Belt and Road Initiative. They're making more contacts with more countries. They're making inroads in Latin America, inroads in Africa, and they're still trying to convince countries in G7, for example, to join them as well. While they're doing that, Italy says, no, hell no, we don't want to be a part of it. The United States is doing everything possible, it seems, to try and convince countries not to join the Belt and Road Initiative. What do you make of that tit for tat, that consternation that's going on between the United States, the West, really, and President Xi, China, and the Belt and Road?
First of all, I want to say BRI's Qatar initiative is not about one country or alliance. It's an idea, a vision shared by countries and organizations around the world with no political agenda and strengths attached. As long as one finds the vision or even some projects attractive, one could simply join, including all the European and U.S. companies. Chinese officials have emphasized many times that the BRI's door is wide open for the U.S. and European countries. The essence of the BRI isn't about dictating terms, but encouraging partnerships. So increasingly, if we look closely, Europe and U.S. have already become part of this initiative in many ways. Several Eastern European countries have signed BRI agreements, and the China's Europe Free Trade Project has linked China directly to 25 European countries, including major cities like Hamburg, Rotterdam, and London. Even the United States had made its mark within the BRI framework. Take Pakistan, for example, where one of the largest hydroelectric projects operates. General Electric, an iconic American company, has supplied generators for this project, showcasing active American participation.
I want to ask you, when we come back, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to ask you about what some of the U.S. think tanks are accusing China and the Belt and Road Initiative of doing and what they're exactly telling countries why they shouldn't join, because if you do, this is going to happen to you. That's what they say. But I want to get your reaction. We're talking to Anna. Anna Gush, she's a host and reporter for CGTN Radio, also a geopolitical commentator, and it's a fascinating conversation. We'll be right back. Hey, by the way, we can continue this conversation, you and I, All we got to do is go over to Twitter because I have a handle there. It's Rick Sanchez TV. And I'll see you there on X or Twitter or whatever they're calling it these days. I'll be looking for you when we come back, though. BRICS seems to be the new kid on the block, as we've discussed before. What role does the BRI now play?
Это война, парни.
Отцы, деда все воевали. Я тоже пошел.
Внимание, воздух. Ушли в укрытие.
Подпустил.
Только взаимодействие и взаимовыручка от вас.
Право 10 принял.
Выстрел!
По позывным только. По позывным. Никаких имен, никаких фамилий.
Енот, связь, блядь! Есть! Есть, 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 молодчик.
Свет по той туже вон мне падает. Падает. Еще как падает.
О, о, вкусно, да? Но был бы кто тут, хана ему. Джамбо!
Мы добровольцы.
Добровольцы, да.
У нас же бар. Добровольческий отряд.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact.
Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Hey, welcome back. You know, there's no question that President Xi finds himself in a new role. He's not only now being considered a counterweight to Western ideology, along with some other leaders, but he's also engaged in the hostilities that are developing in places like Israel and Ukraine. How, and this is important, how does he manage both roles? And we're joined by, once again by Anna Gus. She's a host with CGTN Radio. You can listen to her there. Also, she is a geopolitical commentator and analyst, and it's a delight to talk to her because she's explaining things from a perspective that sometimes we here in the United States and in many parts of the world do not get. For example, and I'm going to throw this at you right now. This is a report put out by Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim is essentially a think tank. It's an American think tank where they are essentially doing the following. They're trying to warn countries not to join the Belt and Road Initiative or any of the initiatives that are being offered by China on economics. And here's what they say. They say that the Chinese will have access and control over your communications, your intelligence, your media, your communication systems, and on top of that, they're very likely to spy on you. So this is what they're saying to countries, so that they don't join this initiative on the part of China. How would you respond to that? Are they right, or are they making it up? Is it fair commentary?
As always, give me a sense that how condescending of these reports and those people in the think tank are. And because they don't believe that besides the United States, are there any other countries or any people in other countries can make the right choices for themselves. I think those conspiracies or those accusations just serve as a pure piece of propaganda against China, against the development of China and any projects that China promoted even though the outcomes are benefiting for a lot of countries. And I think if we make comparisons between the West, the US-led West and China and their aid to other countries, one of the most significant differences is that Chinese aid, including BRI projects, comes with no political preconditions. But Western aid, to a large extent, on the other hand, is sometimes tied to conditions related to democracy, human rights, or governance reforms. And China's approach is seen by some developing countries as less intrusive and more respectful of their sovereignty. And I think they are making these assumptions or making those conclusions based on what they have done to other countries, but not based on the real evidence from China, the real facts from China, or the cooperation outcomes in China and other countries.
Is there, though? You just said something that makes me think. I agree with you, by the way, and I think most sane people do. One country's democracy is another country's, you know, oligarchy or authoritarian system. So it all depends on, you know, what you look at. You know, we constantly hear, even here in the United States, you know, the Republicans say the Democrats are all communists, and the Democrats say that the Republicans are all fascists. So it just depends on where you stand. However, there are countries that do go too far and that are shown to do things they shouldn't be doing. Should some countries be off limits? Should you make sure they straighten their house up before you go in and do an economic deal with them?
I think you raised a very good question. To answer
it's
that,
what I think, do. It's what I do.
I think in the past, there were all kinds of different civilizations. But in modern times, after Europe took the lead in industrialization and modernization, it claimed that it was the only civilization in the world, and civilization changed from plural to singular and became universal. And other countries can only follow their example. But the real world is that we need to respect the diversity of world civilizations, and every country needs to find self-confidence, not simply follow the Western way, the Westernization, and learn from the West. And the promotion of Western democracy caused many such troubles, such as civil war, and let's see a lot of troubles, a lot of crises nowadays in today's world. A lot of problems come from that. Therefore, I think China, to make it simple, believe reform and opening up should start with economic foundation and economic reform first, and then promote political and social reform. I think that's why the BRI, which aims to provide alternative to Western colonialism, attracted a lot of countries. It provides an alternative to the hegemonic system of modern times.
Yeah, no, of course, it makes sense. But I have to ask you a question. And you're there in Beijing, and I'm wondering, what is it like when you hear constantly American politicians, not all of them, but generally speaking, most of them are really stupid. But so they have the way they speak, the way they see the world is almost simplistic. It's not that they're bad people. It's just that they don't read enough or see enough. But you hear them when they refer to China. And, you know, it's not to say China is perfect, because China makes a ton of mistakes and China has its own issues. But the way they vehemently describe China, that they're nothing but sneaky, horrible communists bent on destroying the world and our economic system. You know what I mean? Those may not be the exact words, but they use such profound, vehement, apoplectic language when describing China. The insults are not just criticism, they're insults of the worst degree. How does that sit in Beijing when you hear those things?
I think at first it's very when you hear all those kinds of smears and those allegations without any proofs, you feel very angry. But when you really look, if you look closely of why they're making such moves, it's very simple. It's very easy to understand because the United States nowadays faced a number of serious internal problems, like inflation, is very serious today, and the federal debt problem, the domestic crime rate is rising sharply, and the immigration problems, etc. I think the deterioration of the external international environment the United States face is also severe for a country like the United States. The decline of the influence of the United States alliance even have repeatedly expressed different opinions on policies, for example, towards China against the United States. I think all of which have forced the United States to change some approaches in order to realize its own interest.
And meanwhile, and I'm looking forward to having another discussion with you because we're out of time. But I mean, there's the Taiwan issue. There is the chip war issue that you alluded to. There's, United States military exercises in the South China Sea. There's the buildup of some of the islands on the South China Sea. And that whole Pacific Rim discussion is a fascinating conversation for another time. I will look forward to having that with you. Anna Gah is a host and a reporter for CGTN Radio. It's a delight to be able to have this conversation with her so that we can all learn perspectives that we don't often take into account. Thank you so much, Anna. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Rick. As I earlier mentioned, it's a great honor to talk to you. And I learned a lot as a host from you.
Oh, that's nice of you to say. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, before we go, I want to remind you of our mission. It's simple, really. I want to de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes. Truths don't live in boxes. Truths are everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.